Welcome to Brand Appeal. We're talking about brand storytelling. Today I'm with Cheryl Rogers and Marilyn Anderson to talk about
why it's hard to tell our own stories. Cheryl, you had done a presentation for Rail on yourself, but you talked more about the places that you went. Why do we find it so hard as women to talk about ourselves?
That's a really great question, Shannon. Do you have any thoughts on the issue?
I think we're brought up not to. You know, I think we're brought up thinking that if we toot our own horn, especially as Canadians, that we aren't supposed to beat our own chest and talk about ourselves. That's a very masculine way to communicate. It's very competitive. It's very masculine. It's when we say, hey, I'm the best in the animal world, or the male animal in the tribe is positioning themselves as the leader. What does an ape do? An ape beats its chest. A lion roars. These are masculine behaviors, masculine ways of doing things. And the feminine way, when you look in the animal kingdom, when the women or the female versions of these leaders assert themselves, they assert themselves very differently. They are nurturing to the point where they're the mother figure. If their babies are attacked, it's not the man that goes after, it's the female that does. So until we feel attacked, we are the person that nurtures, you know, takes care of everybody. Everyone comes to because they know that they're going to get taken care of. And they're going to be protective because when Mama Bear comes out, Mama Bear comes out. So now women have stepped into this role of business leaders. We've stepped out of the home into the workforce within a generation. I mean, that shouldn't really be said because women have always been in the workforce. Mm-hmm. You have to look back in Victorian times, look back in agricultural times. Women did work outside of the house. But when there was a male in the organization, the male took the leadership role. Now, females are trying to exert themselves over males. So we're taking those masculine behaviors, those masculine ways of communicating, those masculine ways of beating our chest to try to get the attention to become the leader of the tribe. And it doesn't feel natural to us because it's not natural for us. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with women having more masculine behaviors and taking on more masculine energy. In fact, I think that that is
an important thing for women to do.
And it's disrupting men. Like, for one thing, they like it to begin with, and then they're like, okay, this isn't what I signed up for.
Some men prefer a female-led group.
You know, I grew up in a female-led family. My grandmother on my dad's side had the power. His grandmother was very in the position of power in the family. My mom is very much positioned in the power in the family. So when I got married and tried to exhibit the position of power in the family, it didn't go over well. Some men are okay with it. Other men are not okay with that. However, when it comes into the business world, some men are fine with women leaders. Other men are not. And when we get into those pissy matches with these men to become these leaders, it can look a lot different than we'd like it to look. It doesn't feel natural if we're trying to beat our chest, or we look at these women that are really good or have a lot of masculine energy and can compete on that platform, and we give them names that aren't very flattering. Mm-hmm. I think that that is mainly because we have a value shift in society right now, and equality. I don't believe equality means that women equal men in every single way. Equality is we should be valued for the choices that we make.
And valued for who we are.
Right. If a woman decides to stay home and take care of her children, that should be just as valuable as a woman that decides to go and run a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah. Pardon? We should be valued for who we are and for our contributions.
Exactly. Exactly. And we shouldn't look down on men who stay home and take care of the family.
I follow Michael Wong on Twitter, and he's a stay-at-home dad. He's a really smart tech guy. I've known him for several years, and he's just one of those really nice people. Mm-hmm. I love reading him because he talks about parenting the way I see my daughter and son-in-law parenting Harper. And yes, it's crazy making when you're trying to work and you're at home. Mm-hmm. And the kids ultimately come first and you're working at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes. And, or, you know, the dog threw up on the carpet, whatever it is. But being there for those moments too, he realizes the value and the gift that that is. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that I'm hoping that some dads who've been home working at home because of COVID have had a shift in how their personal teeter-totter has balanced out because they're more aware of what really happens, what it really takes. And the other side of it is that I can remember when people were moving out to, you know, 40 miles outside of Vancouver because they could, the slogan at the time or the concept at the time was that you were driving to your backyard. It was like the more you had to go to get a backyard, you had to go to where you could afford the mortgage. And if that was Langley and you were working downtown, that was Langley and you were driving downtown. Mm-hmm. Now, it meant that to have grass and fences, you weren't home in time to maybe more than kiss the kids goodnight when you got home, if they're little. And you had to leave before they probably got up in the morning. Mm-hmm. But you had weekends and you had the barbecue and you had the back lawn, which you had to cut on the weekend too, but nonetheless. But that was the dream, right? Because that's how most of us were raised.
Yes.
That was home. And just coming to bear with what differences there are created some issues too.
Well, if we look at the history of home ownership and land ownership, it's only really a couple of generations that mm-hmm. middle class owned land. Mm-hmm. For the most part.
Before it was the gentry and they were workers.
Yeah. So women's storytelling has changed over time. Why are we so fascinated with women's stories right now? What do you think?
I think because a lot of it is, it's new, right? I mean, relatively new in the landscape. You know, when you think about it, you know, they're traditionally, most businesses are men led. Mm-hmm. So when you see transitions or you see different things happening from a women led perspective, they also tend to be coming from a different direction, not as conventional and not as traditional types of businesses. So they do seem to come from a more of a creative perspective because a lot of them are more grassroots because a lot of women are not necessarily creating them from that traditional space. They're creating them in pockets of time that they have while they're doing something else. And that tends to create things which are a little bit different and unique. And therefore, ultimately, the stories are a little bit more different and unique, which makes them more interesting to hear. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, from my perspective, from the stories that I've been exposed to, that I've come across, that would be my take on it. And Marilyn, did you have any thoughts?
Yeah, Marilyn?
Well, if the question is, why are they looking for more stories like this?
Netflix, yes.
I can't help but go back to their default, which is how to make more money. So who's got most of the market? Who's controlling purse strings? Who's also working? And who would like to hear about other women who are going up against the same fences or climbing the same ladders? So I think it's market share, personally, cold-bloodedly.
I was just saying that's an excellent insight because at the end of the day, it does all, when you're talking about the business world, it does all come down to dollars and donuts. Yeah. And at the end of the day, yeah. I mean, I was just sharing that, you know, from a, it's interesting. So I think in addition to being all about the dollars and donuts, there's a creative aspect to it as well too, which catches people's interest and imagination. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a component of that as well too, but I definitely agree with you. There's no way it would be capturing the interest of the movers and shakers if there was not, if it was not about the dollars and donuts. I mean, that's the bottom line.
The one interesting thing is, I wonder if we were to look at, now, Gartner probably has a report about this if we chose to look it up. How many of those movers and shakers are now women who are paying closer attention? And also that gives them more buying power mm-hmm. in that media marketplace, right? It's really interesting to see how all of these things come together. And it's not really a Gordian knot. It's more like one of those wonderful macrame balls that has so many different facets. But they're programmed with design. And I think that there's a lot of design programming going on behind this.
stories about women have changed over time. When I was in university, I took a lot of Victorian lit. My favorite book of all time is Jane Eyre, where you have a very independent woman who went through some hardships alone, is an orphan, and is all about her own economy. I mean, she's a governess. She wants to have her own course of income. And in the end, be with the man that she's supposed to be with is one, his wife dies. Two, is that she has the economic power to be unequal. Now, when you look at Lady Audley's secret, Lady Audley was very poor and she was very pretty, and it was all about getting the wealth and marrying the wealthy person, and forsook her husband in order to become wealthy by using beauty. Do we still have those stories in our society today, where there's women who are looking for their equal, but need to have that economic strength and independence first? And are there the women that will use their beauty in order to make money from the men that they attract? Is that still within our society, those stories?
I think to some degree they always will be there. I don't know if the percentiles are shifting. I haven't looked at any demographics along those lines, but
there's it's just a feeling. It's just a feeling. Like, I mean, I'm not looking for demographics. I'm looking for
No, that's what my gut tells me. Mm-hmm. That's what my gut tells me.
Cheryl, how do you see women's stories unfolding over the last 100 years?
Well, I think we've got more of a voice. I think, I think that women have a much stronger voice. A lot of people went through a lot of hardship to get women to vote. I mean, I think a lot of us forget how recent that really was, that women actually got the vote. Everyone in conversations, we just sort of assume that that's how it's always been. But when you look at it from an historical perspective, it's pretty darn recent.
Yes.
And given that it is so recent, there are so many there's so many things going on in society, so many things going on, even in, you know, some of the private clubs, you know, some of the private clubs in some cities, there were limitations as to, you know, who could come in the front door. And as some women come into positions of power, some interesting things happened, because, you know, from the position of power that they were in, they were supposed to enter through the front door. And yet, because of their gender, they were only allowed to come through the back door. And certain clubs had to have their rules changed so that protocol could be followed, because the gender protocol was sort of in the way. And That's not that long ago. That's only, you know, maybe a couple of decades. That was a story I came across actually just fairly recently. And, you know, that was, I believe I was told, I think, 15 years ago, maybe 20. It wasn't that long ago. So, I mean, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. We don't think about how much has changed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's lots of demographics out there. Women make a big chunk of the buying decisions.
Yep.
Whether directly or indirectly. So it's, you know, sorry, Shannon, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, back in the 50s, who was the one doing the grocery shopping in your household? I mean, not that, that you
I wasn't
were,
around in the
50s. I wasn't around in the 50s either. But when you think about back in the 50s, who was the one going to the grocery store to buy the groceries for the most part? Who was making those brand decisions?
Traditionally, it would have been the women. Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm going to show you an ad directed at women back in the 50s. And Marilyn's seen this ad. And I want to know what you think of how brand storytelling has changed.
My goodness.
So for listeners, because this is a podcast, I am going to describe this ad that is directed towards women, because the first line is, if your husband ever finds out, you're not store testing for fresher coffee. Basically, it's a man sitting on a chair with his wife over his lap, and he's spanking her because she didn't buy the right coffee. And this is how brands communicated with women. in order to sell their products. Which I'm, would we see an ad like this today?
Not unless you wanted to incite a revolt, would you publish this ad today in most countries? Not all, but most countries, I think.
It's the type of ad you would only see. There was a series, 5-10 years ago or something, called Mad Men, which was a retrospective look at the advertising industry. That's the type of thing you might see on an episode there, because it was intending to, as Marilyn said, incite a few comments, etc. I don't believe we would see that.
what kind of things though is that ad trying to say? Like, when they're doing the brand story, what feeling or emotion are they trying to incite in the woman in order to get them to buy that their type of coffee?
I mean, what comes up for me is that, you know, they're indicating that, you know, the choice and so on, it's all resting with the man, as opposed to the woman having any real say in the matter. I mean, she's obviously being positioned as, you know, being subservient and a whole bunch of other things, which are definitely seen some shifts. So an ad like that, not only would it not have, it wouldn't roll very, an understatement would be that it would not roll very well currently. And as Marilyn said, I mean, I love that word. It would absolutely incite, and absolutely would incite riots. Like, that's just so inappropriate. It was inappropriate then, but there has been a shift now to be able to, embrace that it is inappropriate and get it off the table.
It was not the only one. I'm going to show you another ad, and we're going to compare the two. So here's another one. And as you can see, this one is not directed at women. It is directed towards men. And the first thing is, it's daring. And of course, this is in the other ad, we saw the man from the back and the woman saying, if your husband ever finds out, kind of with this look on her face. In this one, the woman still has the look on her face, but the husband's spanking and he has this cocky, smirky of a smile about it being daring. And then the next image is him. It's a different woman. It's a blonde this time. And it says it's audacious. And he's doing one of those kisses where you tip the woman down and you give them a kiss and he's on the top. And then the last one is, it's the bolder look in shirts. And there's a brunette this time looking at him in complete awe while he's got this confident look on his face. How have we changed in the way that we speak to men about their products?
What's funny to me is that those three little venues all have the men in different colored shirts. So obviously they're switching from the white shirt to the colored shirt model.
And the women.
And the women, yes, hair color, of course, is how we tell that apart. But they're pastel colors. And I think that's really interesting too, because there's a softening there in a way, but they had to be shown that it was masculine to wear the pastel shirt, or they wouldn't have bought the pastel shirt.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But do ads directed at men still have that domineering and, oh, the women will think of you, will like be in awe of you? Is that brand messaging still in place when you think about ads? Like, when you think about the deodorant, Old Spice, that ad with the guy on the white horse.
Yeah, I think there's been a definite shift from like the Marlboro man to some of the ads now, right? I mean, you've got fragrance ads and so on for men. They're a little bit softer. I mean, they're still, they still bring in that strong and sexy image, because again, they're trying to sell products, but at the same point, they've taken a step back from that hard edges. So, as Marilyn said, I think there's a bit of a softer a bit of a softer setting, how they're positioning men and allowing men to look at some of their softer side. I think we're seeing a lot of blurring, right? I mean, there's, you know, there's products, there's facial products for men now, right? And those are mainstream, very mainstream, as opposed to men that may have used them in the past, but, you know, kind of hid them in the corner of the cabinet or used their, you know, use their wives or girlfriends products so that they didn't have to own up that they were actually using them. Now it's very accepted, as it should be. You know, it's interesting, some shifts. It's letting men be a little bit softer, and it's letting women be a little bit more, you know, not aggressive, but a little bit more able to go out and do what they need to do without being as negatively labeled. There still is a lot of negative labeling.
Mm-hmm.
A man who's being, you know, a man who's going after what he's going after, his goals, is doing well, doing great, is successful, is going after his goals and his dreams. A woman that does the same thing is aggressive and is a five-letter word. Mm-hmm. And they're doing exactly the same thing,
but they're the competition.
Yeah. And it's interesting, right? So it's all point of perspective. And I think we just need to let everybody be who they are and achieve all their potentials and take a step back about putting on all the labels. We just need to let people do what they need to do, support and grow community, because that's really where we're seeing the best benefits come out.
Do you think that we're going to get to that point where it isn't about your gender, it isn't about your skin color, what it's about is you and what you bring to the table?
I think in microcosms, but, you know, and the, you know, with my rose-colored glasses on, I'd love to see that it would be, but, you know, looking at human nature, I don't know that we will ever achieve that. But I do believe that in microcosms, and each of us can promote and support change in our own little worlds. I know I do in mine. And, you know, and I know each of you do in yours. So I think each of us can affect some change on a minor basis, but I think that it would be, you know, it would not be, you know, owning what's out there in the world to believe that it's possible to change everything, but we can't control everything. We can only change what we can control. Mm-hmm. So each of us is responsible for making the change within our own universes.
Having spent the last year and a half where I had the pleasure and the gift of spending one day every week with my granddaughter, who is now two, I have been at parks in the suburbia that is Vancouver and district. But what I have seen, which is really delightful, is that, yes, there are other grandparents like me with kids on the weekend sometimes. But so many of those kids are whether they're babies in backpacks or 10-year-olds going to the water park, are accompanied by their dads. Now, it might be because I'm there on the weekend and mom has said, enough, go. But more and more, it's the dads that are there, mm-hmm. or the dads and the moms that are there. More and more, it's hands-on dads who are turning the wheels around the toys, dads who are pushing the swings, dads who are pushing the strollers. Mm-hmm. That gives me hope.
Okay, so my kids now are 22 and 19. My kids are Gen Z, mm-hmm. you know, born right at the turn of the millennial. Dads were beginning to take on more hands-on. They were beginning to be asked to be more involved inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
However, they were also being asked to continue to be 100% responsible for outside of the house as well. So I saw a lot of men taking on a lot more responsibility, having a lot more work put upon them than, mm-hmm. say, my parents' generation, the baby boomers. Now that balance of power seems to be a little bit more balanced. Men are taking on more of the household things, but women are also taking on more of the non-household things. Do you think more women are now maybe mowing the lawn, making sure that the oil's in the car, or is that still men's realm? Are we choosing the realms that we want?
I think there's more choices, because I think certain people have certain affinities for certain things, or, you know, learned aptitudes. So I think what we're seeing is a little bit more of a shift, but it's grown out of aptitudes and creativities and willingness and just requirement, because if something needs to be done at a certain time of the morning or a certain time of the evening and one party is available and one party's not, well, that's the person that has to do it.
I think you're right. Like, my daughter is very mechanical. She likes to be able to change the oil, change a tire, fix the car. It's really what she enjoys doing, and childcare, not so much. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
I applaud these couples where they're both understanding, you know what? Just because your workday doesn't mean your workday ends. It'd be interesting to hear from a younger millennial who has those young children right now and what their life is like, instead of what, you know, my life as an ex-gen would have been like with young children, what Marilyn's life would have been like with young children. Well,
I was divorced by then. Yeah. I see what happens with my daughter and son-in-law. Mm-hmm. And what I see is, because both parents are involved, that little munchkin is sponging up the whole world in, I know I'm a proud grandparent, but it's beyond that. I see other kids in the playground, and I see, you know, families coming to the playground, and these kids connect on different ways, mm-hmm. in different wavelengths, because they have the whole spectrum. And it seems to be, we're in a very multicultural situation here. And sometimes I see the moms, sometimes I see the dads. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people I've talked to on the playground when I'm there with my granddaughter wind up talking to my daughter the next weekend or the next week, because they see her there, but they recognize the munchkin, mm-hmm. right? And they've talked to me, oh, you must be Marilyn's daughter, right?
Well, like, my mom and dad had a boy and a girl. So I was the girl, the first, and then my brother. You know, it was very different growing up. You know, my dad worked outside the house. My mom worked inside the house. Now my dad actually does cook his breakfast and does make his own lunch, which is really, really different. I had my kids in my late 20s, and I married a traditional type man. So I would travel with my kids on my own. He would not. If he was doing anything with the kids, I had to come along with him. He didn't have the confidence to be with the kids. Of course, at the time, that's not how I thought of it. But now I see that he just didn't have the confidence to be with the kids. My nephew is only 6. And my brother married a millennial. So he married somebody younger. And she's got a great career in law enforcement and is very career driven. My nephew spends a lot of time with my brother. And my brother does travel with him by himself, and does do things with him by himself without putting that demand on his wife to say, hey, look, I need you to help me here. I can see it even in my family, how there has been a change in the role of the dad. Now, I'm not saying that my brother is anywhere near what you're talking about with the millennials. He's still an ex-gen person, but I am seeing this big shift. So with this big shift in society, for gender and brand stories now changing, when they target males, it's more of a softer message than in the past. When they target females, it's more of a stronger message than it was in the past. We talk about strong women. And this is a whole new conversation that our society is having around the women and their brand story. So can we define what a strong woman, like, let's just end this with defining what a strong woman is. So Cheryl, do you have a definition for what, when you think of a strong woman, what kind of characteristics do they have?
Self-motivated and energetic, goal-oriented, and able to have an idea and see it through, get it done. Not that they don't need to bring in other, you know, other entities, because lots of times when you need to get to a goal, you do need to have support, but not necessarily needing, as, you know, 20, 30 years ago, even if you did not need, you would need to have a token man available to, you know, get you through that goal. Mm-hmm. Now it's much more accepted that, you know, a strong woman can go and just make some things happen, which I think that's a very much a societal shift in a good way, because at the same point, society has also shifted so that, you know, if it makes sense in the family situation, there's a lot more support that a man that would decide to stay home with the kids is now not seen as a weak man, which is how society would have seen him in the past. Mm-hmm. It would be the right thing for the family. But that's not how society would have perceived it. And today it's much more of a shift of acceptance that men and women's roles have evolved to a point where there's acceptance that they can be what they need to be, a fluidity of what's required. You know, is it the man that's staying at home? Is it the woman that's staying at home? Are both going out to work and, you know, bringing in support to help out with the kids? Is it a choice of, you know, maybe there are no kids in the picture? It's an evolution of acceptance and letting people, you know, sort of be what they need to be. And to your question about, you know, what is a strong woman within that, I think that there were very strong women in the past, you know, in history. You know, we've had, you know, pilots and, you know, all kinds of interesting women figures in past history. Yes. At the same point, what that means to be a strong woman, I think, has very much evolved. And now being a strong woman is much more of a norm, as opposed to one or two figures that sort of populate history. Mm-hmm. I think there's more of an evolution to more women being accepted to be strong. And that in itself is a shift.
Mm-hmm. Marilyn, what do you think a strong woman is?
I think a strong woman knows herself. She knows her strengths. She can play to them. She is not afraid to ask for help. She understands where compromise, compliment, and like a complementary situation, a partnership is the advantage over the solo flight, so to speak. I think that you were right in your earlier comments about some women having come into a hierarchical workplace situation feeling compelled, if it wasn't natural, to adopt the former masculine role, or at least the outward attitudes mm-hmm. that were defined that way. And I still think that the strong women I know still come from that seek first to understand, then to be understood space, and mm-hmm. that the art of listening is our golden gift.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when people define me as strong, it's like, what are you talking about? Like, like I don't see it. It's hard to see ourselves as strong sometimes.
But when you play to your strengths in this playing field that we're on right now, you are playing to your strengths and you are in control. Mm-hmm. You're not smacking anybody about, but you control the reins. And that is not a bad thing. That's a great thing. You're a genius at what you do. And people need to know that. And they wouldn't get to know that if you assimilated yourself with the wallpaper, right?
Which I did for many years in my marriage. Yeah.
Many of us have that sweatshirt, sadly. And hopefully we've put them in the bottom drawer and gotten rid of the dresser. Right? Seriously, because it was a cloak behind which we felt we had to hide. Mm-hmm. And we need to come out from behind that and invite the audience to come and pursue us with questions and let us do what we do best. And when we aren't doing what we do best, we should be able to acknowledge it and go, and I know someone who is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when we create those kinds of relationships and those kinds of partnerships, we start to build the kind of network that men used to develop on the racquetball court.
Mm-hmm.
And our network has more elasticity to it, I personally believe. So we're building a trampoline here, folks, not a brick wall.
And mm-hmm. I like that. I like that a whole lot, because I think that that has a real future for society, for our kids and their kids and their kids, kids, that it's not hopefully going back to what my grandmother knew. She was born in 1891, just by the way.
But thank you very much, ladies, for coming by and talking to me about brand storytelling and how it's changed for women over the years. And I hope that this has given people a lot to think about when it comes to their own brand storytelling and how can they change their brand story or the wording, image, tone, whatever, in order to appeal to the new gender, which is rapidly evolving in the younger generations. Brand Appeal is sponsored by Rail. Rail is a fintech company that helps small businesses save money and time, plus take the friction out of sales with a community. You can check them out at rail.com. Peel out.